here. It's very short, just 4 pages, so it's readable. So I encourage everyone, read it, cite me. So outside of the talk, when I'm motivated, but the motivation is so far disjoint from the project because the step that we took so far is only computing the tunneling process. We didn't do anything else. Yeah, and I'm going to give you a review of Comitologia tunneling without gravity, a little bit step by step, because there are actually some things in there that are that seem to work, even though the thin wall approximation doesn't hold. But I'll get to that in due time. Then I'm going to show you this piecewise linear and quadratic potential that we managed to solve, how we did the calculation, what's similar to Comitologia's procedure, what's different. And I'm going to conclude and give you an outlook as to what's left to do, which is a lot. So the motivation is the following. Start at the bottom. What does string theory predict for R? Yeah. Okay, that's a pretty ambitious goal. Yeah. What do we mean by this? Well, R comes in the inflationary paradigm from rolling from the scalar field rolling on the potential producing gravitational waves. If it's a large field model, it will be large gravitational waves. If it's a small field model, it will be undetectable gravitational waves. So, first idea would be to say, well, let's take a look at the landscape with all those different vacua and such. So this is just a schematic view. It's not a real landscape. And there's like minima, maxima, false minima. Somewhere there's one true minimum or several, maybe almost degenerate true minima. And so you could say, okay, let's just count what kind of potentials do we have in there, how many of those are large field types, so like an m squared, phi squared. Oh. I don't know. I think there should have been a picture of CMB pole, which didn't show up. Yeah. 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 But in its current state, yeah. It's just in someone's mind.
It's unimaginable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, as I was saying, you have different potentials in there, something that looks like the m squared phi squared, something that looks like an inflection point, which is small field, and so you just count large field versus small field potentials and say, no, this, the relative ratio of those gives me a measure of how likely it is to have a large or a small r. But in fact, there's another step in the procedure that we should take, which is taking a look at how do we actually populate those vacua? How do we get there? So then our approach is now, which you can agree or disagree on, let's assume we can start randomly anywhere in this landscape of vacua. Yeah, so just assume initially the field could be at any position. We'll start tunneling down, tunneling down, tunneling down, tunneling down. And at some point, hopefully, it's going to reach an inflationary part, which is us. Which eventually will be us. And then the question is not how frequent are large and small field potentials, but how frequent does it happen that you end up tunneling into a large field or a small field potential? Yeah? And so you can look at this in this one-dimensional slice. Yeah? So you start off here, and you can fall down there or down there. Which one is more likely? Do you keep tunneling? And so on and so forth. Now, here's everything I just said in words. Now, the issue is, so far, tunneling solutions, there's only one approximation scheme known, to my knowledge, which is Comitologia tunneling, which basically assumes that the two vacua are almost degenerate. Otherwise, you have no handle to solve a generic problem. And so we were going to see whether we can find a class of potentials, at least as a toy model, that we can solve analytically, maybe everywhere, at least certainly not where thin wall is valid. Yeah. Let's see whether we can get some handle on thick wall. This was our initial take at this. So we take this toy model here. Yeah, it's a linear piece. This thing is trapped in a false vacuum. Yeah? And then there's an m squared phi squared piece here. And, well, almost a linear piece over there. Yeah. And the question is, would it tunnel more likely to the left or to the right? Yeah. Well, we can. The tunneling process from here to there has already been solved. This is what we knew about. This was in 1992. So a completely piecewise potential is exactly solvable. You can write down the tunneling amplitude, okay, in the semi-classical approximation, so you can write down the exact expression for B. Yeah. No approximations, no nothing. But that's the only case so far that we know. Yeah. Okay, and then after we compute the tunneling amplitude, we should make sure that actually you get 60 E folds of inflation. You have to take into account that you enter the inflationary period with some finite initial speed, because you can start up here, you roll, accelerate, and you would start inflating only later. The other thing that will play a role, but what we neglect for now, is gravity. Yeah, so once gravity comes into play, the gravitational So the sitter bubble will pull on this thing and make this field slow down a little. So this counteracts the initial speed you could get. Yeah, but this is all still in the future.
So you don't want to cool gravity?
No, in this part, not yet.
So it's not directly rotor on
no,
place?
No, not yet.
But is that actually a reasonable approximation if you want to get inflation out?
No, we want to get to gravity. We're first looking for potentials that we can solve analytically, where we have some idea, and this is the first step, sort of. Yeah.
So are you going to say ultimately you might be understandably worried that these things are only source constant, potentials not C1, so look, the solution equation is not C2, so do you have any words to say about this?
That's the say again.
Like, so I was like, it looks like you're gonna have your exact things. You're gonna have cuffs mm-hmm. in your potential.
Yeah.
So the solution isn't C2. So I might be worried about.
Oh.
Am I really
yeah. So
sense?
Yeah, we did some numerical solutions to this potential, and they agree pretty well with the analytical approximations we have. So it seems to be fine.
Okay.
So. Yeah. So we did numerics. Yeah. We did the shooting width. I'm gonna get to that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to slow you down.
Okay. So. Whatever, 3-4 slide review of combinatorial shear tunneling. Yeah, what do you do here? You have a potential with a false vacuum loaded by plus, located at phi plus, with a potential energy V plus. You have the top of the potential at phi t, potential V t. You have the true minimum at V minus and phi minus, and the field will nucleate from the false vacuum, not exactly into phi minus, but into some location phi naught, which in general, at least in combinatorial shear, is very close to phi minus. Yeah. From now on, whenever you see a plus, it's a quantity related to the false vacuum, and when you see a minus, it's a quantity related to the true vacuum. The tunnel rate per unit volume is given by this expression. You usually forget about A, because this involves solving functional determinants, and it's a very model-dependent statement, so you say, okay. It doesn't really matter anyways, because all that matters is the guy in the exponent. Yeah. This one might be one order of magnitude, two of my order of magnitude different at most. Yeah. But you have to get this one right because this goes in exponentially. Yeah. B is given by the difference in action between what's called the bound solution and the action of the field sitting in the false vacuum. Yeah. This bound solution is assumed to be O4 symmetric. There's a proof apparently that the least action will have O4 symmetry. Yeah, and that's the Euclidean-less action. The equations of motion would then be this one here, so it's almost Newton's force law with some strange friction term. Yeah. The important part here is there's a different sign because you Euclideanized it. So whenever I say potential, you should keep in mind that this guy is actually rolling in the inverted potential. Yeah. So what's going on here is at phi naught, which is at the center of the bubble, at radius zero, the field is sitting up here, and then it rolls down to phi plus. Yeah. And as I said before, this one is exactly solvable for the special case of just a piecewise linear potential, which was done in 92 by those two guys. Now, what's the thin wall approximation? As I said before, it means that you have the false, the true vacuum roughly degenerate. Yeah. So epsilon, the difference in energy, should go to zero. In this limit, you don't have to solve the equations of motion, but you can show, which we're going to do in the next slide.
I'm a bit confused. This is very nice. Can you go back for mm-hmm. So do you start from top, like from phi minus and go to phi plus, or the vice versa, from phi plus go to phi?
You start from phi naught uh-huh. in the inside of the bubble
yeah.
and go to phi plus on the outside, right?
Well, I guess it doesn't make the difference. You can go either way.
Yeah, yeah. If you solve the equation, it doesn't matter which way you go, yeah.
But in one case, you said there are parallel universes, so it's probably smarter to do it more easily.
Sorry,
what did you say? In one case, you sit there forever because you're exactly at the top. In the other case, you don't because you're not exactly at the top.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to go
up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
You're not exactly the place to be the
top. Well, there's no gravity in there. Exactly.
Yeah, there's no gravity in there.
But that
this
is
one here for now, we're
exactly, if you were exactly there, either with gravity or without, we'll always stay there, right? So it's.
But you asked me to talk about the
so it takes yeah. infinite time or infinite r radius either way that you go, right? So if you go, the r goes from 0 to infinity, so.
You don't want to start at infinity and go into the bubble. You want to start inside the bubble and go
with
it.
I guess, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the right thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point is that phi prime should vanish at both.
Yeah,
zero
sure. Yeah, it will have, we'll get to the boundary conditions. Yeah, so as I said, B is given by this expression. You don't have to solve the equations of motion, you just have to perform this integral. So it's rather easy. In the sonding process, it turns out that phi naught is really, really close to phi minus, like it's right on the spot. The wall generally, so this is the shape of the field and the inside of the bubble at the bubble wall, which are denoted by RT. And then on the outside, yes, so inside is really sitting at phi minus, and on the outside it's sitting at phi plus. Yeah. I mean, it's approaching it asymptotically, but it's good enough for most practical purposes. Now, I've been talking about the tunneling radius. It's an important quantity in the way we computed things. This RT is the tunneling radius. The question is, how do you define it? And this I want to ask you about in a couple of slides. Yeah? So the way that Comin and Lucia defined it, they say dB by dr at the tunneling radius should be 0. Yeah? And you can see that RT is just given by this expression here. Yeah? Now, exactly why this is the case, I don't know. Maybe you know. I just want to point out at this stage that the wall is infinitely thin. Yeah? So no matter what definition of radius you use, it doesn't matter. Yeah? It's all at the same location, essentially. Because in one, at least one version of the Comin and Lucia paper, they talk about that they take as the tunneling radius the position in the middle between phi plus and phi minus. Yeah, which I don't see what this has to do with this condition here.
Well, you know the solution is tanh in this limit, right? It's just tanh plus where the argument is x plus
it's
r plus r naught, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you stick that in the action, you minimize the action.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's generically, this prescription here, I mean, the tanh is only for a specific potential, right? For phi to the 4 potentials. Yeah, so this should work for any potential, and I don't see a relationship between this one and the middle between phi plus and phi minus. I can't derive it. Yeah.
No, but I mean, what is b here?
B is the exponent of the tunneling amplitude. So this is the quantity we want to calculate.
Just that you have to minimize the action and.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying this is the thin wall approximation. Yeah, they don't minimize the action. You just make some assumptions. Yeah. You say that the difference in vacuum energies is very, very tiny. Yeah, in this limit, you can neglect the friction term. Yeah, and so on. So I'm going to go through this now. Yeah. So in this thin wall, you say, well, let's assume for now that we end up that our bubble will nucleate as a very, very large radius. Yeah. So we already know that inside the bubble, the field should be at zero velocity. Outside the bubble, it should be at zero velocity. So the only place where this could play a role is near the transition, and we say this transition is happening very, very far out. Yeah. So this limit, it's just Newton's force equation, and you're good. This will give you conservation of energy. So 1/2 phi dot squared minus V naught is constant. It's a minus, not a plus V naught, because it's Euclideanized. Yeah. So then you can perform this integral here over the action for inside the bubble, the true vacuum within the wall. You get this one here, which is just S1. Here you replaced this guy by the conserved energy. Yeah. And outside of the bubble, you have no contribution to B, because there it's the field, the bounds is in the true in the false vacuum, and you subtract the action of this false of the false vacuum. Yeah. So this tunneling amplitude will become the sum of two terms. It's a function of RT. You take the derivative, and you will find this is what you get. Yeah, so you do dB by. Oh, sorry. Yeah, so you do dB by dRT equals 0, plug it back in, that's the Comin and Lucia expression. Yeah. Now, let's get to the piecewise linear and quadratic potential. First, any questions to this part? I mean, I assume you have all at least seen it at some point in your lives. Yeah. So, piecewise linear potential, linear piece, quadratic piece. Yeah. The boundary conditions are as follows. I denote with R fields that are living on the right-hand side, so in the quadratic part, and with L fields are living on the left-hand side. Yeah. So inside the bubble at radius 0, phi r should be at phi naught, some to determine location where you tunnel to, zero velocity outside the bubble at some radius r plus, which could be in principle infinitely far out. The field should be sitting at phi plus, and the false vacuum also with zero velocity, and you solve this equation of motion. Well, it's a linear and a quadratic potential. It's a linear equation. You can solve this. Yeah? turns out. Oh, okay, let me do the slide later. I think the slides got out of order, out of sequence. You can solve this. Okay, so comment on numerics. We wrote a little Mathematica package that does this for you. So you just plug in your potential and it computes a tunneling solution for you. It's almost automatic. You still have to set a time scale for how long it should integrate. We hope to automatize that at some point. And it's just a bunch of commands you throw in. It needs the derivative of the potential. And then it computes a solution with this value for the false and the true vacuum. That's it. Yeah. The way it works is, I mean, as you said before, ideally you start integrating from here. Yeah, but it's happening infinitely far out. You can try starting at time zero. You always start at time zero. But you can try starting a little bit to the right and start integrating. But because of limited numerical precision, this will always run away. So you have to do something like a shooting method. So you start at some random location between phi minus and phi t. Let the field roll. If it rolls too far, you start a little bit to the right, yeah, until it's rolling too short. And then you sort of bisect it until you end up with a solution somewhere here. You start somewhere around here and end up right there with zero velocity.
So if you're doing the shooting method, I don't see why it makes a difference if you start on the left or on the right. Because, I mean,
I thought so too, but at least Mathematica can't do this. Yeah.
Well, you can't go both ways.
Yeah, you can't have it start. I mean, so I guess ultimately the reason is you can't start here because you're sitting at the top at zero velocity, right? I mean, it's zero derivative of the potential at it.
But you can start slightly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you start a tiny little bit, but then maybe I didn't make it tiny enough, but the tiny values I chose always led to the field running much, much farther than phi minus. Yeah.
But you have no trouble going the other way.
No, I had no trouble. I mean, this is, you just do shooting, right? At first you go too far, then you start a little bit further to the right. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. And then you converge to that one.
Okay. So I guess in one case you have positive friction, in the other case you have negative friction, right? Because of that.
Yeah.
Which one is positive, which one is negative?
Coming from here to there is positive friction.
So I guess that's why it's more stabilized.
Yeah.
The other way it puts negative.
Okay, so there's other exact solutions. So when we started this project, we knew about this one. Turns out there's also papers by a Japanese group that looked at tunneling in two quadratic pieces. Yeah, but they only gave the expression for the tunneling rate in terms of the tunneling radius. Yeah, so they left this, or rather the radius, well, they call it tunneling radius. The tunneling radius for them is the radius where the field is sitting right at the top here. Yeah. And they didn't solve the remaining equations. Yeah. So the strategy is solve the equation of motion now analytically for the left and the right part, observe the boundary conditions as I said before. Match the solutions at the tunneling radius, which I set for our purposes at zero. Why not? And we shift the potential left and right and integrate and get B. What we hope to get is something like this. So this will not be thin wall anymore. Yeah? So the wall now is a finite thickness. Yeah.
What is your definition of tunneling radius?
The tunneling radius for us is where the field is at zero value. Yeah. And we get to some interesting points about that. So, well, as I said a couple of slides ago, I guess they got mixed up. Sorry about that. Most linear equations to solve, so you can solve them in terms of Hankel functions or Bessel functions, no matter what you use. Yeah, you make them observe the boundary conditions. You end up with this. In the quadratic part, the field behaves like this. In the linear part, the field behaves like that. Yeah. Now we just need to match the field on the left and on the right, and this will determine R plus and phi naught. Remember, R plus was the position where I assume that the field is sitting in the up from where on the field would sit in the false vacuum. Yeah, phi naught is the location where we tunnel to. And then there's another constant appearing here, RT, but it's three equations, right? Both phis on the left and on the right should be zero, and the derivatives should match. Yeah, it's three equations, three unknown, you can solve this. Yeah, so it turns out you can solve them almost, because the last equation that remains is this one here. It involves Bessel function, and you can't do anything about this. You can solve for phi naught and R plus in terms of RT. You can even perform the integrals for B, for this kind of potential. This is exact, giving you this exact expression here. Yeah. So this is no approximation. B as a function of RT and the parameters of the potential. Yeah, I left it at MRT, but never mind. Yeah. So what's alpha that's appearing here in delta? Alpha is the ratio of phi plus over phi minus. Yeah, so something like a measure of the thickness of the potential barrier in field space. And delta, you can't see this here, is the ratio of the false to the true vacuum energy. Yeah. Now note that this one does not come from dB by dRT is zero. Yeah. But if you take this guy, dB by dRT equals zero, you end up with exactly the same equation.
I mean, that condition is just supposed to be saying we're supposed to be extremizing the action. So if you basically solve the equations of motion, then
this condition,
as long as it's approximation, how works better, then yes.
How does this one say we're extremizing the action?
Because you're taking essentially the other part to say I know how to calculate I calculate the rate. It's the B is just the action minus the background, but that's a constant. So mm-hmm. You're saying I just want to extremize the action. But that's what it means to find the
with solution. Respect to RT, you mean?
You're just saying consider all possible solutions. Mm-hmm. The solution that we're looking for, what do we mean by a solution of the equation of the motion from the action? Mm-hmm. We mean vary the action, find an extreme.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's just saying consider various possible solutions, mm-hmm. and the only thing that could possibly work is the thing where that condition is true. Assuming by approximation
tells. Yeah, but I don't fully understand yet, because I mean, why don't you then just have that dB by dRT, or not by dR, but say dB by any function of R should be zero?
So it should be true under any variation, but the idea is within this approximation, you've eliminated everything down in terms of just one single variable. So by the time this is done,
I see.
Then you're saying. That's not a proof mm-hmm. that what you wrote down it works and that your approximation is consistent. Mm-hmm. But it's a necessary condition.
I see. Oh, great. Wow. Wonderful.
Travis, where does that top RT condition come from?
This one here?
Yeah.
This is one of the matching conditions. We have three matching conditions. I solved two of them for R plus and phi naught. Yeah, so the radius where the field becomes the false vacuum and the tunnel location we tunnel to. And there's one equation left. That's this one here. So now to solve everything analytically, we would have to solve that one here for RT. It's a bit tough.
But are you saying that this is not the same as the dB by dRT?
This is the same, but this equation does not come from here. Yeah.
But it's equivalent.
Yeah, it's equivalent. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And now I understand why. Thank you.
I don't get it. How could if it's equivalent, then why doesn't it come from here?
No, I didn't use this to get here.
But you could have.
I could have. Yeah. Yeah. I could have, but I didn't. Yeah.
Well, if you could figure out how to include it, that's fine.
Well,
yeah.
You could always
do
numerically.
Yeah, right.
No, but dB by dR at RT gives you an equation that's that equation.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so what we're going to do with this now is we take the limits of large and small MRT and see how valid the solutions are going to be across the range of MRT. Yeah. First, let's give you an intuition what's alpha and delta. So I said alpha is determining the width in field space. So I keep delta fixed from here to here and I vary alpha, make alpha smaller. So in field space, the potential barrier gets smaller or wider, depending on which way you look at it. And from here to there, I vary delta. So here delta is smaller, here delta is bigger. If delta is 1, then the potentials, then the two minima would be exactly degenerate. Yeah, this would be the thin wall approximation. Yeah, so. So for a large MRT, what do we get? Let's take pick alpha of 0.5, delta of 0.9. This would give you an MRT of 49. Solving the Bessel function equation exactly. Yeah. In this limit, if you assume that MRT is large, yeah, you can approximate this equation by the ratio of Bessel functions by this one here, and this equation, so this side equals that side, can be solved for MRT. Gives you this expression here. Yeah. This is not yet thin wall. Thin wall is if we send epsilon to zero. Yeah. So let's do that. We end up with this one here, which is exactly the same as thin wall. So we calculated things correctly. Yeah. But if you look at it carefully, you see there's two ways we can get a large MRT here. Yeah. One is to make
alpha again was
the width in field space, the ratio of phi plus over phi minus. Yeah? If you look at it carefully, yeah, there's two ways of making MRT large. One is to set delta to 1 to make the denominator blow up. The other one is to just make alpha bigger. Yeah? So there's a case where the radius of the bubble is large, but it's not a thin wall bubble. Yeah. Well, there's, what do you mean it can't get too big?
Well, at some point, the near the peak is always, normally, right, you can't, the top of the curve needs to be sufficiently curved, otherwise there is no such, there is no Kolmogorov-Schlüssel solution. But I guess here it's always peaked.
Yeah, there's always a peak here. Yeah, you can solve for phi naught. Yeah, phi naught is given by phi 1 times 1 minus something. This something contains e to the minus mrt. Mrt large means, forget about the second part here, and the field really tunnels pretty close to phi minus. Yeah, so this is the picture. It tunnels from here all the way down there.
There are a bunch of things that I don't quite follow. So first of all, what is this thing about the potential being
here? Okay, so this is, this as far as I know, it goes back to Sinard and Jensen. And basically, you don't want to inflate on the top of the hill. And you can show basically if it's the potential is sufficiently curved at the top of the hill, there necessarily is such a solution. You basically have both what they call undershot and overshot solutions.
Yeah.
But if that's not true,
you're saying there are cases where
if the top of the potential is not sufficiently curved, there are no Kolmogorov-Schlüssel type solutions. There are still assuming you believe in the Hawking loss type solutions.
Right. If there was gravity. I mean, we have no gravity.
Without gravity, there is no problem. Okay, so you said there. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you assume this guy is just flat up here for a long time, yeah, really flat, yeah, then the field will just stop up there.
Yeah. It
cannot roll through. Yeah,
that's weird. But the point is, you cannot find a solution to the Euclidean equation.
We don't worry about that because we always have this peak here, right? So the field never gets stuck there.
The other question, so you say it's not thin wall, how do you know it's not thin wall?
Delta to 1 would be thin wall, yeah? Let's make delta 0.1. How do I make MRT large? Well, I crank up alpha. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
So alpha was the ratio of
alpha is the width in field space, yeah? So if I push the force vacuum very, very far to the left, end up with a bubble that has that tunnels to a large, large, large radius, or that nucleus with a large radius, but it's not thin wall. Yeah, I mean, so here, the one I'm showing here, oops. So I guess the wall is really thin. You can't really see it here. Yeah, I mean, MRT is 50, delta is 0.1, so it's relatively thin wall.
But you see, this mass is kind of ad hoc thing that you define. I mean, why is that the definition of this?
Which mass?
M.
M, it's the parameter of the potential.
Yeah, but I mean, that's at the bottom of the potential.
No, it's the whole. This is one quadratic guy, right? I'm just putting a quadratic here.
Yeah, but I'm guessing the more relevant mass would be something like the curvature on top of the potential. Maybe we're doing the tunneling.
You mean on the physical grounds? No, I mean, this MRT that I'm using here, yeah? I'm just working with MRT, with this mass, because this is the one that shows up in this equation, right? This is the equation that's left that we need to solve. And so we need to take limits for this guy large or small. That's all I'm doing.
Yeah, I understand. My point is that I wouldn't think that the natural mass to define the thickness of the wall in terms of, I would think that mass would be something about.
Well, no, I'm not using the mass to define the thickness of the wall. I use alpha to define the thickness of the wall. Yeah,
okay. So these two definitions don't coincide.
Yeah.
That's
your point. Yeah. And you can show if you take B, it goes like phi minus squared over m squared. That's all the phi minus and m dependence that there is times some function of alpha and delta. It's rather ugly. I'm not showing this, but it agrees with, if you take the limit epsilon goes to 0, it agrees with the thin wall approximation. Yeah. Well, once again, this covers more than just thin wall. Yeah. I already said all of this. Yeah, there's this non-thin wall part. Now let me show you one of those non-thin wall solutions. So this one here, I make alpha 5. Yeah, delta is 0.5. Yeah, so epsilon would be huge. and I can still solve this guy, right? So this is the potential, what it looks like. It's a very, very steep drop here. And, well, you see the wall has now a finite thickness. Yeah. So now to the other limit, small MRT. Yeah. If I pick alpha 10 to the minus 2, delta 10 to the minus 10, yeah, this means I push phi plus very, very close to the top, and I make the false vacuum extremely, extremely high, almost at the top. Yeah. And this limit MRT is, say, 0.3. Yeah. Then in this case, you will tunnel, just hop over the top, and this is what it looks like in field space. See, phi minus is here, this one down here in field space, phi minus. The field as a function of radius is here. Yeah. So it won't tunnel anywhere near there. It's tunneling just up there. And it's a very, very wide wall. Yeah. This is not new in the following, in the sense that I'm going to get to in a minute. Yeah. But as I said, it's small MRT, so you can approximate the ratio of Bessel functions. You get this one here. You can solve it. Get this one for MRT. Phi naught, you can see now, if MRT is small, this guy is small, this guy is big, something over something big is zero. Yeah. So phi naught, the location we tunnel to, will always be very, very close to zero, which is the top of your potential. Yeah. And this is the expression for B in terms of alpha and delta. Once again, goes like phi minus squared over m squared times some function. This function of alpha and delta is now much more easy. Yeah. Now, the thing why this is not new is you can, to a good approximation, assume that, I mean, if you were to zoom in here, yeah, this guy then would almost look like a linear piece. Yeah, approximately this one is a linear piece. This is just what Duncan and Jensen did. Yeah, and in fact, turns out, yes, MRT is exactly the same as Duncan and Jensen obtained. Yeah, so we agree with what Duncan and Jensen did. So in a small MRT limit, it's also fine. Yeah, and well, the B's are also the same. But now, what about intermediate values of MRT? Yeah, so we got a solution for small MRT, for large MRT. Ideally, we'd like to have control everywhere. So how good or how bad are we doing? Yeah, if you pick alpha of 0.01. Delta of 10 to the minus 5, we get up an exact MRT solving the this one matching equation numerically of 0.3. The small MRT limit, in the small MRT approximation, MRT will be 0.3, which is good. In the large one, it's 1.5, so obviously this is a small value. Yeah. Now, what happens if we make MRT of order 1, with choosing those values of alpha and delta? Yeah. Then small MRT is still pretty good. Yeah. It's just off by 2% or so, 3%. Yeah, large MRT is still crappy. Yeah, but this gives us hope that maybe this guy, both solutions together could be valid everywhere. And it turns out that is correct. So what I'm plotting here is the error in RT, so over RT. And what I take for this error in RT is either the error between the large MRT limit or the small MRT limit and the true value, depending which one is smaller. Yes. So I'm defining MRT to be this, either this one or this one, depending which one gives us the smaller error. And okay, sorry, you can't really see that.
Sorry. You get the solution numerically and then compare it to this analytic.
Yeah, I compare it to the analytics.
I mean, but I mean, if you can get it numerically for all this, then you can just find a fitting function to the numerical.
Yeah. I guess you could, but it's nice to get try this one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do a 2D fitting function, of course, yeah. But so what we have find here is that the error in RT is always smaller than 20%, yeah, which is pretty good, yeah, for all values of MRT. So MRT can be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 100, 0.1, doesn't matter. Yeah, our analytic approximation is always pretty good compared to the numerical one. The error in B is a bit bigger because B is a nonlinear function of RT, yeah, but it's less than, say, 40 to 50% everywhere. Yeah, and this only, the error actually only gets big in the very narrow range of parameter space. Yeah, you see all the other values of delta up here, yeah. Remember, delta of 1 would be thin wall, yeah. Delta of 0 would be the false vacuum very, very high up there, yeah. So we have control over basically everything. Yoo-hoo! Well, not quite.
But that's the error. compare to the what is on the vertical axis again?
The error in B.
Yeah.
So the error between the numeric and analytical solution
divided
by the analytical solution.
And that's on for B on the right and for
yeah,
R.
For,
on
that's
the
right.
Left.
Yeah.
So it's lousy over in that corner, but it's good everywhere.
Well, lousy, it's 50%, which is not too bad. I mean, you did an approximation for small and large MRT, yeah? And for intermediate values, you're still good to 50%. I'm happy with that.
But you could find, like, an interpolation.
Yeah, you could do some interpolation thing or something, yeah? I mean, just forget about all analytics. Just solve this guy on a grid, yeah? Put a fitting function through and go with it, yeah, of course. Yeah.
20 and 50 hours. Worse than particle physics.
Yeah. Yeah, cosmological constant.
All now don't point fingers.
Well, the trouble with this little one is that I've heard, so many things, humor's all, it's good enough for cosmological work or government work, especially good enough for government funded cosmological work.
Yeah.
I remember it was the one of the first cosmology talks I listened to when I was a grad student. I forget that. I'm afraid of grabbing the name. It's a great problem.
Yeah, so here's just a couple more numbers. Yeah, so just to show you the values for different values of RT, I kept delta fixed here and varied alpha to give different values of RT. So small, about one, and large-ish, yeah, but still not too large. And you see the exact value. And compared to what you get from Duncan and Jensen, so this linear approximation or the thin wall, and you see they're nowhere near there. And we are within 50% of that, which is not too bad. Yeah. So now, well, we're not quite done yet because we need to include gravity. That's why I neglected. Yeah. So there's work by Parker from 81 where he included gravity in the thin wall limit. Yeah, so the relevant parameter here is the mass of the right-hand side of the potential divided by the true minimum. Yeah. And what you see is in this plot, plotting as a function of the field of the location of the true minimum, the value of B including gravity over the value of B without gravity. Yeah. And you see it's always smaller. So one is up here. Yeah. No matter what you do, it's always smaller. Yeah. Smaller B means larger tunneling rate. Yeah. And intuitively, this is sort of clear. If you include gravity, you have the sitter space on the outside of your bubble pulling on you. Yeah. So it's helping you, supporting you, pulling stuff out of the vacuum. Yeah.
So you're just... And you're pulling results here for these...
For our potential.
For your potential.
Yeah.
Okay.
For our potential, yeah, yeah, so...
There's then...
But this is only the thin wall limit, so the interesting part is not done yet.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the interesting part is not done yet, so, yeah. Okay, and I think that's about it. So, what I've shown you is the exact tunneling amplitude of B in terms of RT, the tunneling radius, yeah. You can get RT either from solving this algebraic approximation or from solving analytic. From solving this algebraic equation involving the Bessel functions or doing some approximations. Yeah, if you do the approximations, you get 50% errors. So this would then could be used for populating the initial conditions for inflation if we had included gravity. So that's what we need to do. Still include gravity, then determine how long will inflation actually last, depending on where we tunnel out there. And then we need to determine the relative frequency of both types of potentials. And, well, this is a project for it that will last another 1 or 2 years. So thank you for your attention. Questions?
So do you know whether for all parameters there's a solution? I mean, I guess you find it numerically, so there ought to be a class.
Yeah.
Unless,
I didn't play with insanely large values of alpha, so maybe at some point, at least numerically, it won't work because the potential will be really, really, really flat.
Well, if you put a delta function there, then
should. Yeah, it should be analytically, but numerically, you might not get it.
I think when you include gravity, you're still maybe in trouble.
Yeah.
For big values in alpha, because it's not. It's
yeah,
not
you run against.
Right at the top, it's actually the average curvature.
Yeah.
There might be a conflict between. There might still be a conflict between having the m squared phi squared part support inflation and finding a solution. I might still worry.
Yeah, yeah. I'm worrying too. Yeah.
But the statement is that without gravity, if you have a kink, then you're always fine. Is that? That doesn't sound right, but...
I think you're always fine. Yeah. Without gravity, you're always fine, period.
Absolutely. What was this thing about coverage on the top?
If you have, so if you include gravity, you've got two time scales now. Mm-hmm. So there's another variable, which is basically a scale factor. And that scale factor is two zeros, so mm-hmm. it's like a sine type shape.
Yeah.
And the time scale it takes to go from one thing to the other depends on the energy scale of the potential. But the time scale for you to go from one side of the barrier to the other depends on the curvature, right? Imagine you're like oscillating around the bottom.
Yeah.
So if you can't get from one side to the other on the right time scale, then you're screwed, you can't find a solution. But actually, maybe in this case, because that cuts...
Well,
I
guess it depends... No, I think I maintain my original. I mean, maybe you're missing something that... Right. Well, it depends on... Here, he's also neglecting, I think, the back reaction of the potential on the original solution. So it's, so we don't have any second zero, so...
What do you mean?
Right, so you said it's always strictly... Right, the radius he's always thinking to be strictly...
Well,
so
include gravity, right?
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean when you say include gravity. You could mean find a consistent solution to the gravitational equations that neglect back reaction, or you could mean include back reaction.
Neither. I'm not doing either. I'm not doing either.
Right.
Yeah.
But without gravity, what you're doing is exact.
Yeah. Well, not exact, but...
And the statement that you always find
a solution. And the exciting part for us was, yay, we found a potential where you have analytic control over. And we thought this was just the second one, but now it turns out we're the third one, so, well.
But this is a weird statement. You're claiming that if you add gravity, there are some situations where you cannot have tunneling.
Not commonly to shear tunneling. You can have Hawking Moss tunneling, so your whole universe can tunnel at once.
Yeah. Okay. So that's okay.
Yeah.
The whole universe.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The whole Hubble radius.
The whole one.
Yeah. The Hubble one. Yeah. Which I mean, for me, it's my universe.
So what fails in the Coleman Deluca that would it fail?
You can't match these timescales.
Yeah, but
you end up with one. The instant time ends up being singular. You end up with two zero point. You start from zero and you have to get back to zero.
Yeah. So why wouldn't you have the same problem for Hawking Moss then?
Well, for Hawking Moss, you were saying, well, depending on what interpretation you make, right? You just sit at the top, basically.
So you just sit at the top.
You just sit at the top, or it's, depending on what interpretation, very small fluctuations around there. So
physically, the statement is that when the predicted Coleman-Deluca bubble gets bigger than the center radius,
yeah,
it ceases to be the minimum action. So,
I guess I'm not sure. This would be the standard.
No lower actions,
this is very disturbing. I mean, it seems that there are these nomenclature saying this works in this case, this works. I mean, there must be like a general prescription that should work.
Yeah, there are some papers by Henry Tai about this where he attempted to. There are some papers by Henry Tai about this where he attempted to do that, but I haven't gone through them in detail. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yep.